Baseball season is back. The 2017 season is finally underway, and no better way to celebrate than with Out of the Park Baseball 18 and MLB Manager 2017. Both of those games help bring you this week's episode of the Press Row Podcast. Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here. We are so excited at Out of the Park Developments for our two new baseball games. You guys probably know all about Out of the Park Baseball 18. If you don't, well, why not? It's the follow-up to the 2016 Metacritic PC Game of the Year. This year's game has a whole bunch of cool new features, including a new challenge mode so you can battle against your friends. It includes the addition for the first time ever in any game, the addition of the Historic Negro League, so you can take all those great players from the past and have them compete with or against the major leaguers of their time or before or afterwards. It's got a great updated 3D engine, which allows the gameplay itself to unfold in a really cool, nifty way. And it's got highlight reels now, which are completely new, and just so much more stuff. And you guys also probably know that you can play any team, any season, major league or minor leagues, from the late 1870s through 2017, including the latest rosters from opening day 2017. It's unbelievable. And MLB Manager lets you take Out of the Park Baseball with you anywhere you go on your phone or your iPad, or either iPhone or Android device or the iPad. MLB Manager is only $4.99. It's got a brand new visual look and feel. It's got the 2017 season. It's got three historic past seasons, 1927, 1948, or 1997. And you can get any other season you want for just 99 cents. You can get 10 for $5, or every season dating back to 1901 for just $19.99. MLB Manager 2017 available now for $4.99 on the Apple iTunes Store or the Android Store, Google Play. And Out of the Park Baseball 18 available through our website. And if you use the code PRESS18, we'll give you an extra 10% off, and you get it through Steam as well. Out of the Park Baseball 18, MLB Manager 2017, proudly bringing you this week's episode of the Press Row Podcast. Enjoy the show.
All right, it's now been well over a month since MLB The Show 17 released, and that makes it an ideal time to revisit the game, and specifically its Diamond Dynasty mode, which is something that we could only really assess from a surface level initially. Welcome to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wheateye, Pasta Padre. With me for this episode are some of the best and brightest baseball minds and Diamond Dynasty experts out there. We're going to examine the mode thoroughly. We're going to look at areas where it excels, where it maybe needs some improvement, along with giving you some advice on the best way to operate with your own team in the mode. So let's welcome in the panel. First up, we've got frequent guest on the podcast. It's TJ Lowerman. He's one of my favorite people. We love to talk Diamond Dynasty. TJ, you're that sports gamer. How you been doing?
Pretty upset, because now I've been downgraded from regular panelist to just guest.
Oh, no.
Wow. That's very hurtful, and I understand. I see how it is.
He said you're one of his favorite people. Jeez.
Look, I would rather be a panelist than one of his favorite people. I'd rather he hate me and have me on every episode.
Nah. Yeah, he's all business. TJ's all business, all branding, all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to arbitrarily upgrade and downgrade you from time to time, TJ. You just have to deal with that part of it.
You can guess. I like that.
Contributing editor of hitthepass.com. So as that title, that means literally nothing. I feel I deserve a little more respect.
That's like, what is it, the Players Tribune with Jeter as an editor?
That guy works real hard. He's up. He's out there updating the WordPress. You just don't see it.
All right. We've also got Paul Sporer, whose work you can find on FanGraphs and ESPN, and he streams on Twitch. Welcome to Press Row Podcast, Paul. This happens to be your first time on the show, actually. Isn't that right?
It sure is, but long-time listener. I can say that. Long-time, first time. So I'm excited to be on. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, it's exciting to have you here. We've also got Chris Jardine, a.k.a. Snaggle J. He's streams, YouTubes, contributes to Hit the Pass, actually, recently. Welcome back to the podcast, Chris.
Well, this is actually my first time as well.
Is it? Given,
it is. This is my first appearance on the Press Row podcast, despite all my, you know, the back corners of the internet where I usually find myself in. This is the first time I've made my way into this particular back corner, but I'm appreciative of the opportunity and excited to talk about some Diamond Dynasty.
All right. Well, yeah, let's get into it, because there's a lot to get to. I think just right from the outset here, let's just go with your basic assessment on the mode this year. It's kind of general thoughts on Diamond Dynasty. Maybe what's your favorite change? What do you dislike that was changed for this year? And then I'm curious to hear from you how much time you've invested in Diamond Dynasty this year compared to in past years. TJ, you want to start us off?
Sure. I have been playing a ton of Diamond Dynasty, though this whole week I've kind of taken off because I had problems Monday night, and then I was like, I need to stop because it's been a month and we're still having server issues. But if I separate out the server issues, I'm really loving Diamond Dynasty this year. I'm liking everything that they've added, all the little modes. I like ranked seasons, assuming the servers work, because I should be 16 or I should be 18-1, but I'm 16-3. But yeah, I like the new mission structure. I don't like the menus of the missions, but yeah, I feel like everything that they've done this year has really been a plus that I can think of for the mode, save for we're, almost 40 days after the game launched and still having massive server issues.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this the reliability of the servers is going to play a big role in how much enjoyment people have with the mode and how much they want to put into it. And that's why, especially those first couple weeks, I mean, we still have issues now, but it gets really discouraging. And I can tell you that I avoided the mode more than I would have liked. And I've definitely played the offline versus CPU conquest, those things far more than venturing online. And I've just completely given up on the idea of doing things like the events that they've rolled out a few of already. So we'll probably talk more about servers, I'm sure, as we go on in the episode, because that's a big deal. Paul, give us your background on playing Diamond Dynasty. You know, why you like it. You know, how have you been playing since the beginning with Diamond Dynasty, and then get your thoughts on the mode.
Yeah, I got the game on release night, or actually a little bit before. I was fortunate enough for SDS hook it up with a review copy, so I was playing even, you know, pretty much right when it came out, been dealing with all the issues. And obviously that's first and foremost, we have to acknowledge, okay, it's been a nightmare. You peel that away, and I know not everyone can. Like, if that factors into your rating of the game, I totally get that. Let's think about the times when it's working. It's a tremendous game. I absolutely love it. All the content that they're putting in, all the cards of the flashbacks, the legends. Really, they've really gone deep on flashbacks this year. I love the individual year legends. I like the ranked season setup. I like the events setup. I like all the missions, the player epics. I did Conquest right away this year. I waited forever last year, and I didn't even get it all done, and I missed out on some fun cards. So I'm working my way onto those cards. I got to have that Curtis Granderson. I need to just spend more time against the computer, but right now I've been actually spending a lot of time playing online despite the troubles. And, you know, this isn't to, like, take up for the troubles. There's no excuse. TJ said something, 40-something days, and we're still having it. That's a nightmare. But despite all that, everyone's kind of like where they would be, right? Like, you look at the World Series leaderboard, it's the same players. You know, everyone getting to the World Series. You look on Twitter, the same, you know, people are winning BR, a few people joining them. Like, despite all of it, we've kind of plugged on as a community and been able to get a lot done despite the roadblocks that they constantly put up. So there's been some wins for them, but unfortunately a few more L's than we'd like to see from San Diego. But again, I still think once things are at peak, we got a great game on our hands for the summer. But running out of time to say, like, when they fix it. Now, at the beginning I was saying when they fix it, not if. Now I'm closer to, like, if they get it running smoothly.
Well, they've even talked about compensation. I believe that was 1 week after the game came out, and it's still nowhere to be found, probably because they don't want to compensate and have people continue to have these issues and then have to compensate again.
Until everything's working, they're not going to give it out, which makes sense. But at the same time, the longer that lingers, it's like, dang, you guys can't even get it working enough to give us some free stuff for the troubles that we've had. So, you know, I know they're working on it, but it's been tough, man. It's been tough. Whatever happened with all the server and all that sort of stuff, it can't happen again next year. I mean, this is worse than last year at this point.
All right, Snaggle J, some of your thoughts.
So I feel like I have a different kind of position because, you know, I watch TJ play the game and stream, and I watch Paul stream the game quite frequently. And I know, like, TJ plays a lot during peak hours, and I know Paul plays during peak hours and in some early morning hours. I personally have spent the majority of my Diamond Dynasty time during the lower peak times during the day, just the benefit of the circumstance that I have. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I actually had less issues in the first 30 days of the game than I've had in the last 10. I, like TJ, have recently stopped playing the game. I have not played Diamond Dynasty since Monday or Tuesday. The first 30, during the down peak times, I found the game was great. You know, it worked good. The servers were fine. I feel like since they've started deploying these patches, and I think more and more people are trying to jump in and see if it's working better. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's been detrimental to this whole process, but I feel like I personally have had more issues in the last 10 days than I did in the first month. But having said that, I really can't think of any major negatives in terms of the mode itself. You know, again, I agree with Paul. I love what they're doing with the flashbacks and the specifics. I'm very excited to see the cards that they're going to introduce over the next, I would assume, you know, probably 9 to 10 months if you use 16 sure. as a footprint. I mean, like if I was being nitpicky, the one biggest issue that and TJ and I and Millennium have talked about this on Bullpen Banter several times is if you're new into Diamond Dynasty, this is a lot to take in starting out Diamond Dynasty. All of us on this podcast, we've played Diamond Dynasty for many years. We know how the mode works. When they add things, we're able to quickly digest that and say, okay, this is worth my time. This is not worth my time. I'm going to kind of work on this. If you're new into this mode, I can see it being, you know, man, where do I start? Like, where is a good way for me to invest my time? Now, luckily, there's lots of people in the community who are very helpful.
I was going to say that.
Who you can tweet at. You can tweet at myself or at Paul or at TJ or at 50 other people and say, hey, listen, like, what's the deal? What do you recommend I spend my time on in the first 10 hours, first 20 hours? And we'll gladly give you that information. But it can be a bit overwhelming. But, I mean, from a hardcore person's perspective, like, it's like content, content, content. I can't get enough content.
Well, I was going to say, I'm not new to it, right? I've been playing the mode since it began. And I have difficulty when I go in deciding where I want to focus my time, right? Do I want to put certain players on the team to try to achieve some statistical goal? Do I just want to play games to win so I can get more stubs or whatever it might be? Should I go after a certain mission? Should I do Conquest a second time? I mean, every time I go in and I say to myself, I have an hour or whatever, it's difficult to decide what I want to do when I get in there. And I have a pretty good grasp of what there is there. And so I can totally see how overwhelming that is. And this is an issue we've had as we discussed other Ultimate Team type modes, Madden, FIFA, NBA 2K, where there's so much going on and that it becomes... It just crushes you, and at a certain point, either you decide that's too much for me, or I just can't deal with it anymore. It becomes almost like a job. It's a concern I've had with the mode for a long time, and one of my favorite things about Diamond Dynasty the last 2 years has been that it's the most simplified of these modes. It's the clearest. When you go in, you kind of have an understanding of what you should be doing, and I think it lost a little bit of that this year. And I don't know if that's going to be damaging at all. I mean, for those of us who are investing tens and hundreds of hours into the mode, we love all that stuff. But I can totally see how that could turn some people off.
I see what you're saying there for sure. You know what I kind of equate it to is television nowadays. I don't know how much you guys watch TV, but there's so much stuff. I think whether you're a veteran or new to Diamond Dynasty, you have to resign yourself to the fact that you're not going to be able to do it all. You're just not. Like, there's going to be some people out there that are trying to do it all. Moose 21, Chase G, there are a couple guys out there that, you know, are Diamond 100 already. I'm sure there's a few others, but I know those two. And they've put in the time. Chase took the first week off after release and just you know, did, you know, spent all of his time there.
Yeah.
But for the most part, many of us are not going to be able to do it all. So you're going to have to pick and choose. And again, I relate it to TV. I got friends that are watching this, that, and the other. Like, did you watch this? Yeah. Did you watch this? Oh, this is on Netflix. Oh, this is on IFC. You got to watch this. Can't do it. I can't do it. I used to say, oh, I'll put that on my list. I got this giant list of stuff. I can't watch all of it. And that's kind of the way it is with these ultimate team levels. And I agree with you that MLB used to be a little bit more streamlined, and maybe you could do all of it. But it is expanding, and I'm okay with it, though. And there is a point where it can be too much. I do agree with that. But I don't think they're there yet. And I think you just kind of need to choose what you're going to do, like these Player of the Month things. That's not going to be for everybody. First off, the 20K packs are no longer available, so you got to buy all five of the cards and get the Mitch Haniger for 1,400 tickets. And that just might be too much, and that's all right. Not everything's going to be for everybody and something that everybody can do. You are going to have to make choices. But I do think there's plenty of choices and plenty of paths to getting a quality team.
And TJ, I know you have one very specific concern related to when we had this rollout of the monthly awards cards, which just came out today as we're recording this, was that they're going a certain direction with rolling out of cards where you're getting a specific frame of time, or in other games like Madden, it would be a specific game. But here with the baseball, monthly based cards, and your concern is related to getting too many of a certain player on the market, right?
Yeah, we've seen Diamond Dynasty in the past. They've pretty much left active players, pretty much their live series card, and maybe they'd get like one or two flashbacks.
Plus the inside edge. Altering those live cards. Yeah.
Yeah, and the big thing.
And the weekly updates.
Yeah, and the big thing was that you had the weekly updates and your inside edge, which are going to change those cards over time. And the thing that has turned me off of, like, Mutt and FIFA recently has been, you know, I just got this cool new Aaron Rodgers card, and 2 days later he gets a Team of the Week card. And then 3 weeks later there's a breast cancer awareness version. And then 2 weeks after that he gets a Team of the Month card.
Here's the thing, though. It's not going to happen that way in MLB, and I think for a couple reasons why. First off, there's only 6 months, right? And they're only doing Play of the Week or Play of the Month, and so they're six opportunities. Secondly, they're not just taking the very best players from that month and making cards of them, or else we'd get a Mike Trout card every month. For example, you know, Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman, and Mike Trout were better than Aaron Judge, Mitch Haniger, and Chris Owings, yet they chose some guys who are a little bit more off the beaten path. I think they know how it would look if they just put out several Mike Trouts and several Bryce Harpers. So I don't know that we're necessarily in danger of that happening. I understand that people, you know, are giving a little crooked eye to it, making sure, hey, let's not go down this road. But I think they've already shown with just this rollout that that's not where they're going, or else they would have done a Chris Sale, a Noah Syndergaard instead of Jason Vargas and Mike Leake. So okay.
Let me ask you then, because there were, I believe, 10,000 limited number of these monthly awards packs that went out, and they sold out within 6 hours or something.
Yeah, something like that.
So when you look at the price, $20, and whether people went out and directly spent $20 or used $20 worth of stubs, still the equivalent there of $20 worth of their digital currency, that would be, now this doesn't take into account any number of factors, but that would be $200,000 worth of revenue if you were just extrapolating the $20 per pack. How can they turn down doing that more often? Are they, because if they're going to be able to make money off it, like this is a brand new thing for them. They put out packs in the past that are different on a weekly basis, but they've never really had the draw of this one, as we saw with the interest in it today and the interest in these specific cards. How do they keep from doing that, which is what we've seen in the other games it's perhaps tempting, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but perhaps I'm just naive in thinking that they'll understand that, I mean, it'll alienate too many people. Like, they're not going to pony up every week. Like, I don't think so. There would be some people for sure But I don't know that you're selling out in 6 hours if you do it every week. This was like a special event. We were all looking forward to it. There was hype built around it. If you do it every week, I don't know. You know, it's a hypothetical because it's not happening right now. I just don't see it being something that they could do every week. I mean, I can say for myself, I wouldn't do it. I invested the 20,000 stubs here because I want to do the Eric Thames mission. But, you know, plus you got to buy the other ones. So unless you got the really good one, with the Zimmerman or the Judge, the two expensive ones, then you got to buy the other four. I mean, I think it was like 150,000 stubs or thereabout, depending on which card you got to get it all. I just don't see people doling that out every week. So, yes, they made it this week, but can you just extrapolate? I don't think so.
Okay.
I think you wear out the market pretty quickly.
Hey, everybody. We're going to take just a moment here and thank our great sponsors of this week's episode of the Press Row Podcast, which is Blue Apron. I really hope that you can support Blue Apron through the Press Row Podcast code that we're going to give you, or the URL, because these guys do a great job and they help make the Press Row Podcast exist. So if you're a fan of the show, I strongly urge you to give it a shot. Why? Well, you know that not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so it's important to know where your food comes from. And thankfully, for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron delivers delicious, quality food courtesy of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers right across the U.S., right to your door, supporting a more sustainable food system and setting the highest standards for ingredients. And plus, with Blue Apron's freshness guarantee, you can be sure that every ingredient in your delivery will arrive ready to cook or they'll make it right. And it's no wonder they are the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. And as I said, I've used Blue Apron, and they absolutely deliver what they say. My wife is the cook in the family, but we did Blue Apron. My son and I wound up making the dinner. Blue Apron not only made it easy, but they made it fun, and the food tasted great. I mean, just look at some of the meals that are available this month. You got things like spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza with olives, bell peppers, and ricotta salad, a sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot, and ginger fried rice. Wow. Parmesan crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine and roasted broccoli. That sounds amazing. Baby broccoli and fontina paninis with a hard-boiled egg and arugula salad. This is really good stuff. It's quality ingredients, and they give you exactly what you need and tell you exactly how to make it. So do us a big solid at the Press Row Podcast. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/pressrow. It's all one word, press row. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/pressrow. blueapron.com/pressrow. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that angle of it. And I'm just thinking ahead to, well, I could see them doing all-star versions of, you know, the guys who make the all-star game, or home run derby versions of certain guys. You know, they're going to find ways to put twists on and make, you know, new cards that are appealing in unique ways, right? And so I don't think it's going the direction of having 12 Aaron Rodgers versions or whatever Madden had, but I can see where they're going to look at the success of this one and start to think, all right, how can we take more advantage of this? So, I mean, it's probably a bit of an experiment to see how this would go, and that it sold out in 6 hours tells you there's demand.
And that is with people still not 100% happy with the game. So if they do another 10,000 next time, and servers have been working for a couple of weeks at that point, that could go even quicker.
Well, yeah, they are going to do another one next month. I'm saying, just don't see a world where they do weekly. First off, it'd be really stupid to make baseball cards off of 1 week. It seems remarkably stupid to do so for football, but football's a pretty stupid sport in general. I get, as a football fan, by the way, I'm not anti-football. I do watch football, but I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous to make a card off of one game. But yeah, to do it off a week in baseball, I mean, how would those not just be all 99 diamonds?
Hey, 2K does with NBA is even worse. They do it off one game.
That is blindingly stupid.
Yeah. Even that Topps Bunt thing, that's not a game. That's just like a card collecting thing. They do it if you like have three hits or don't fall on the way to the batter's box.
Well, yeah, they're not a game, like you said. They're doing something kind of different with the card collecting. I see that whenever there's like a no hitter, get your Topps bunt, $9.99 Bartolo Colon hit a home run card, sort of thing. Like I get that they're trying, since people don't buy cards as much anymore, that's their answer to it. But I don't know. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, right? Maybe they will do every week. And but you know what? I'll push back against it. I certainly won't be out there getting it. Some people will, and maybe they'll think that there's enough. But again, I think they're in danger if they think, oh, we can extrapolate this and do this all the time now, because today sold out very quickly.
Okay, so before we get into breaking down some of the various aspects of the mode, which we've kind of touched on a few of already, but before we get into them more, I think it's always fun to get a sense of how everybody's personal teams are shaping up. So, you know, tell me a little bit about your teams. Tell me about your favorite players, maybe who you're trying to go after now, who you hope to acquire next. You know, Chris, start us off with your how your team is shaping up at this point.
I am very pleased with how my team has evolved. Going back to something we talked about earlier with, you know, kind of trying to develop a path into the mode and with so much to do, I kind of took the first few days and just kind of made up a plan of what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go. And one thing I've done so far is I've absolutely avoided the two events that they've had and just have continued to grind. I've got a fistful of diamond players right now. My favorite probably being the Texas Epic or the Texas Collection Buddy Bell, who I absolutely love. I know TJ's a big fan of him as well. And you know, the one thing that I've enjoyed about building my team is I feel like you can go at any particular point, you can go in any particular direction with where you are. You know, you finish the Buddy Bell and it's like, okay, to finish the Buddy Bell, you know, you get the Rangers players, which means you ended up with Beltre and Lucroy and Darvish and Hamels. It's like, do you want to go after the Kinsler right away? Or do you want to spend your time, you know, working on something else? And I mean, I'm sure the four of us here all have vastly different looking teams at this point. And we probably have similar time spent with the game. But yeah, I feel like my team's shaping up pretty good. I really have no complaints so far.
Paul, tell us about your team.
Man, I've been blessed. I've gotten a lot of support in the stream. And so we've been able to get quite a few packs. And we pulled a Andrew Miller and a Bryce Harper. Those are my two diamond pulls. I ended up selling the Miller because his price was through the roof. I sold it at like 70 and it's higher now. I sold too early apparently. Yeah, but I realized, you know, that. Go ahead.
I was going to say probably for a reliever, you don't need somebody that expensive.
It's just not worth it. And I like Andrew Miller. I know some don't like him because he doesn't have a changeup. I think you can use that slider as a changeup. So again, I do like him, but not at that price when Zach Britton was like half the price. So I ended up selling him. Did keep the Bryce Harper, finished off the Nats. I haven't done the Dawson yet. I need to because it's such a good card, or at least I've heard and seen against me. But yeah, you know, Chris Sale was another card that I'm really loving right now. That's at the high end. Nelson Cruz. Some of the mid-tier guys that I really am enjoying are Kyle Seager, Jose Ramirez, who just got bumped up to gold today. The live Eric Thames, although I am going for that diamond Eric Thames. Mm. And then Austin Jackson, the Tigers collection card, is awesome. Not only did I keep him, or not only did I love him when I was using him, but I've kept him in my lineup after getting the Max Scherzer Epic. I'm a very big fan of that card. And then a couple low-level cards. Brett Cecil, lefties are tough to find. Brett Cecil seems to be one of the few lefties who's always up on inside edge. Yeah. Charlie Blackman and Jake Lamb. So, you know, I kind of run the gamut with the team. I was going to focus on getting Corey Seager to get the brothers going, but once the player of the month thing came on, I shifted focus, and now I want to get that Eric Thames.
All right, TJ, how's your team been progressing here since we talked like a month ago?
It's coming together slowly but surely. One of my big things was, luckily, as a Braves fan, I was going for the Braves collection to start the year. And you may remember Daniel, the Uber YouTuber. He was like, hey, I have Freddie Freeman. I'm not going to use him. I'll sell him to you. So I ended up paying like 12,000, 13,000 subs for him at the time. Now I think he's going for like 60 or 70,000. Or no, not definitely not that high, I don't think. He could be now. He's going for like 40-something thousand. He's moved up to Diamond. He's got IE boosts every day, it seems like. So with his normal IE boost, I think he's like 98 contact versus righties and 99 power versus righties, or maybe the other way around. But people still pitch to him, which seems kind of dumb. So I have like way too many home runs with him. Yeah, as Chris said, also that Buddy Bell that you get from the Rangers collection, he's a third baseman, but I move him over to shortstop because I think he's got 94 fielding and a cannon.
Yeah, tremendous fielder.
Yeah, so even if you move him and take whatever hit you're going to take, he's still going to be better defensively than most of the shortstops.
And TJ, as a secondary position, the hit you take is at 5 points defensively?
I think it's 5%.
5%?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
So you're still dealing with an 89. It's really not a bad bad move there.
I don't think there's... What, it's like the Crawford, I think it's like a 91, and I think he might be the highest-rated defender.
Maybe Simmons is higher, but it's one of those two for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so moving him there, you're not really losing anything, but you're gaining a whole lot of batting. Of course, I picked up my Jared Saltalamacchia off the ticket counter because that guy's a monster against right-handed pitching. And I just one of the things we talked about a lot going into this year was the lack of being able to know if you're going to face a righty or a lefty.
Mm-hmm.
I start Jared Saltalamacchia all the time because I'm willing to take that risk because he's just that good. And catchers
way more righties than lefties.
Yeah, and catchers that can hit both very well are not super frequent.
Very rare.
Yeah, and they're usually very expensive. So,
Posada only. I mean, is there anybody else that actually can?
I think catcher Posey is okay against.
Oh, I can't Posey's hit with Posey, right. So I don't count him because I personally can't hit with him, which is a bummer. Yeah. I haven't been able to hit with him in three seasons so far.
Yeah, but starting to come together. Actually, got a lot of gold pitchers like Dallas Keuchel and David Price. Oh, I actually just got the 91 CC Sabathia that you get from doing conquest stuff.
That card cuts me up, man.
Really good. I love that CC.
Yeah, for a freebie, essentially, you just got to put the work in. That card's
is that for getting 60 strikeouts with a left-handed starter or something like that?
Yeah.
After you do the AL East.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten that one done. I've gotten a few of those individual players done, but not that one.
Yeah.
You haven't started conquest. I would make a case to maybe go East first. A lot of people start because you kind of start Midwest, leaning West, and people, I understand that path, but if you want the better cards first, I would head, I mean, I guess you got to get AL on either side, but since the AL East is what the CC is, I might make a beeline for that, work the Central, and then come over West, because that CC is monstrous.
Yeah, I feel like out of the six rewards, the CC is the one that I've had the most success with. The Goldschmidt is nice, but I feel like there's other options.
First baseman.
Yeah, there's so many different directions you can go at first base. I feel like the Sabathia is probably of the six conquest rewards, like the base divisional rewards. The Sabathia is probably the best.
Yeah, that Goldschmidt is handy though, especially for me since I have Freddie Freeman who destroys right-handed pitching, but is like okay against lefties. So having that Goldschmidt just in case. For a clutch moment against lefties, come in pretty handy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, team's coming together. 16,
all right.
16-3 in ranked seasons. It should be 18-1, but what are you going to do?
I mean, keep complaining about it, I'm sure, is what you're going to do.
That's what I'm going to keep doing, because I don't even want to go for the Goldschmidt now.
Yeah, you're definitely the only one that's lost games that way.
Yeah, I know, it's messed up.
And I'm sure none of those wins were the guy disconnecting and went your way, you know, for no reason. I'm sure that didn't happen at all.
Doesn't work that way.
No, everyone just talks about the ones where they disconnected and got screwed. Nobody talks about how they got five wins from random disconnects with their opponent.
That's how I got Jackie Robinson in this last event.
There you go.
I was 8-0. I got into the ninth game. After I don't even think he threw a pitch. The game disconnected, gave me a win. In the 10th game, I mean, I think it disconnected after like the first inning and gave me the win. And I was like, all right, I got Jackie Robinson. Don't need to play this anymore.
Don't get me wrong. It sucks that, you know, you have to deal with any of it. But I do think that if you play at a certain level, you know, a certain volume, it really does come out in the wash in terms of ones that go your way and go against you. It just sucks when the ones that go against you.
It's not satisfying.
In key moments, right? Like you're 10-0, and then one of your negative ones comes up, and you're 10-1 for no damn reason. Like I get the frustration. I'm not saying don't be upset, but I'm saying the people that are like, oh, I'm 32-6, and four of those are disconnects. I'm like, well, how many of the 32 are disconnects in your favor, Chief?
And I love losing as long as it's a good game.
I think
I'm the only YouTuber that posts losses.
Wait, people on YouTube don't post losses?
Never.
No.
Also, did you know that every pack pulled by a YouTuber has a diamond in it? It's so weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, it's funny how that works out.
I play live on Twitch, so I can't hide the losses. They're there for everybody to see.
Me neither, yeah. I'd say the same thing.
All right, let's go back to kind of Chris mentioned earlier, and we talked about briefly, the idea of when you go in, what should you do? So I want to talk a little bit about how your strategies or your advice on building a team. Where should you go? What should you do first? What should you go in? Should you go after missions? Should you go after conquest? Are there certain missions you would recommend? Should you go after like the individual player missions like the Chipper Jones, those type of things? So let's get into that first, and then afterwards we'll talk about packs versus, or how to spend your stubs is basically what I want to talk about a bit. But before then, how about where should you focus your time, TJ?
If you're just starting out and you're not going to throw, you know, $20 in to start ripping some packs, just to build yourself a base, which I would recommend that I do. But not a good thing for anybody else.
I gotta cut you off. If you're gonna throw $20 in, do not buy packs. Do not. If you really want to build a base team,
well, yeah, you
spend that 24,000 stubs. You go in the market, and I understand that pulling packs is fun. Don't get me wrong. I pull some packs regularly. Okay, but if you are balling on a budget and you happen to throw in a little bit, you gotta go market. You have to. That's just the best way, because you're gonna be just wildly disappointed when you pull a 20 bundle, you don't get Jack, and now you've kind of started deflated. So you go in with 24,000 stubs, which is what $20 gets you. You can get some really solid golds and tons of good silvers. So you can build yourself a heck of a team just on $20.
What those packs will give you, and I wouldn't recommend it either, going after packs, but it will give you a lot of players, even if they're not high-value players, that get you closer towards completing collections.
That's
which
true.
To me is one of the – that's one of my early goals is to – I have stubs. Yeah. I earn my stubs. I use it to complete collections maybe more so than going after certain missions. I don't know if that's the same with you guys. But but to me, I mean, there are some collections. The Padres started off without having even a gold player. There's a few of the Braves, the White Sox,
not the Braves.
Those were ones I went after.
The Braves
after
have
first.
A diamond now, yeah. But
the Phillies, A's, and Twins. Yeah. I think
Cardinals are kind of an interesting one because they do have some golds, but no diamonds, and they actually just lost a gold with Sungwan Oh getting downgraded.
Yeah, and their golds are pretty cheap. The thing is, the game changer with me with the collections was the team epic missions.
Absolutely.
You know, when looking at what to do, when you look at the Padres, as Brian mentioned, perfect example. Super cheap team, but if you're willing to put a little bit extra work in and, you know, get the hits and get the home runs with McCovey and get that Tony Gwynn, is probably the best gold contact hitter in the game. You know, 90s in both contacts, 90 in speed, 90 in vision, and again, it's essentially a quote-unquote free card because, you know, you don't have to pay for it, but the collection. So yeah, like right. me personally, you know, having the pre-order, I was fortunate enough that I pulled both Garrett Cole and Starling Marte in my in my pre-order stuff. So
nice.
immediately the Pirates became something I wanted to do. That Dougie Drabek is a phenomenal card. Doesn't have the velocity, but everything he throws moves hard to hit. Put a little more work in to get that 95 McCutcheon. It's I feel like the collections are, if you have the time to put in the work, that is where you should focus your time, solely because the player epics can be so rewarding. Again, you know, the debate on whether you drop a 20 bomb on PAX or whether you drop it on the market, you know, I tend, if it was me personally, at this point, 6 weeks in, I would say spend it on the market. If we're talking first week of April, I say open PAX because the prices on the market were still way too high.
Sure.
I think we're at a point now where the market has regulated itself a little bit. You don't see bronzes going for 400 stubs like you saw the first 2 weeks of April, where collections were on the low end were hard to complete because bronzes were going for 300 and 400 stubs. But again, like the collections have so much reward beyond that collection 40 man, because those team epics can make your team in a hurry. You know, TJ and I sing the Buddy Bell praises, but it's not just the Buddy Bell. It's you can get the 97 Kinsler. You get a third baseman in Beltre. You get a left-handed starter in Hamels. You get a right-handed starter in Darvish. You get a catcher in Lucroy. You know, you can use Bell at shortstop. Like, you have half your team from one collection.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. You really got to look at the team before you do it, because one of the things that sucks about doing the Braves set is you have Freddie Freeman, who's a monster at first base, even without the IE boost, and even when he was gold. And the card that you get for doing everything is Fred McGriff, who, right, even when Freddie Freeman was gold, he was arguably better than that Fred McGriff card.
Yeah.
It's that's one thing you do have to be careful of when you're looking at the epics, like which ones are truly gonna help you. Like, I've heard that diamond Lorenzo Cain's pretty good, but like, you get a gold Lorenzo Cain when collecting the Royals, so like, is it really that much better? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's the thing is a lot. I've had a lot of people tweet at me about the Donaldson, the A's Donaldson, and say, like, you know, A's are super cheap. Like, should I go after the Donaldson? And I'm like, sure. Like, he's a bottomless pit against righties. Like, you know, if you want to go do a team epic to have a guy that comes off the bench and hits lefties well, like, that's my advice to you. There is definitely some risk reward there, but if you're able to go through and you're able to analyze it and you're able to pick out some teams that, you know, that you're going to be able to get a good rounded team and get some good complementary cards to one another, the collections and the epics together can really, really be time well spent.
Random question here, but do you guys use the created player? Do you build up your created player and put them on your roster, or do you not?
I have this year because I think they're on the level of what their ratings suggest. Whereas last year it was kind of hit and miss, where some people, you know, because most of them were 99 by summer. Some people's 99s played like freaking 69s, and others played like 129s. And I don't know, some of it was probably just the player, like whoever was controlling them. I get that, you know, but I didn't have much success with it last year, so I didn't feel the need to use it. This year, they all look to be playing at a level more commensurate with their rating. So I caved and put one at my catcher.
Yeah, is that really the best reason? Is for positional flexibility?
Definitely. Although you can't put them anywhere now. You could, because I think I put mine at catcher. If I changed them out of the game, it would be out of position. Whereas last year, you could put them everywhere. And maneuver them in the game. But yeah, I can't hit with Lucroy. I've tried. I've given him over 100 plate appearances. I'm hitting like 238. So I made the move. And creative player was the move there.
Okay, so it came up a little bit already, but I want to look at how stubs are spent, because this is a big thing. Every time a new pack comes out, people want to know, should I spend my stubs on this pack, or should I go after target specific players in the marketplace? Now, of course, when you target somebody in the marketplace, you know the price you can get them at. You know what that's going to cost you. When you open packs, you're hoping you're going to get something that's beyond your means, that is worth more than the stubs. You know, if I have 30,000 stubs, I can get a good player, or I can buy packs. And maybe I get a player, maybe I get a Mike Trout who's worth 250,000 stubs. the chances of that are very, very small, but it's somebody's getting them because they're on the market. So where do you generally look to spend your stubs? How do you use those in the game, TJ?
Usually, like I said, when I start the game, I'll open packs to try to get something good, and maybe that will like give me a direction. Like, unless, you know, either I pull someone that's worth a lot, which I never do, and then I can sell that and build a team around those stubs. Or I also like doing a bunch of packs to start, just because then I get, like, I feel like once I have a base of, like, silver players on my team that I'm comfortable with, that's when I start targeting the specific guys and making the moves, looking at players that are going to help me in not only in the immediate, but also in, like, the long run. So, like, going back to sets, like, getting a Brian Dozier who's going to help me at second base now, but I know later on down the road I can get that Glenn Perkins who, as Paul said earlier, Andrew Miller costs, you know, 80,000 stubs, but you can get a 91 Glenn Perkins for 10,000 stubs. But stuff like that, usually after silvers, I will start going after individual players and trying to piece things together.
Paul, your thoughts on that?
I stand firm that packs are never a good idea. That doesn't mean you can't get them. They can be fun. But it really depends on what you plan on doing with spending money on the game, right? If your team no money, you can't do packs. Or if your team little money, like I said, you know, I'm do 50 or lower. I'm going to do 20 now and maybe 20 at the All-Star break or something like that. You're really trying to manage your budget. You can't do packs. Like, that's just one of the things that you give up because they're just – they're statistically such a bad idea that you'll be wasting your stubs. However, if you're somebody that's going to put in a couple hundred bucks over the year, you know, it's part of your disposable income, your entertainment budget, if you will, then get some packs. That's fine, you know, and hope to spike something big. It's a rush. It's great when it happens. Just obviously understand that the odds are extremely against you. And so if you're trying to build the best team that you can, then the market is the way to go. And, you know, a lot of things too, if you are also balling on a budget, trying to invest in guys that are going to get upgraded is a good way to go. And, you know, I will be, this is such a TJ move to then use that to promote the fact that I do roster upgrades every Wednesday on my Twitch channel. But I will do that in true TJ fashion. Twitch.tv/PSPOR24. Every Wednesday night, we do talk about the guys who we think are going to get upgraded. And of course, if you spike a guy that goes up levels, then it's you have a good chance to make some stubs on that, especially if they go from gold to diamond or silver to gold.
Mm-hmm. I may have 65 of one guy just waiting for the upgrade.
65, wow.
I know who the guy is, but I'm not going to spoil his secret.
Some people do
secret.
Crazy number. Is it Lance McCullers?
No.
Close enough. Right-handed pitcher, different team.
I feel like me personally.
Michael Pineda?
No.
I think he's bronze, right?
No, he's silver.
The only packs I've opened since the first week were strictly for research purposes. You know, they come out with a special pack. I want to see how they are. I want to be able to, you know, tweet it out, you know, let my followers know what I get, let the guys in the Discord know what we're getting, just what we're seeing, you know, more for research purposes. I tend to push more towards Paul's thinking that Now that we're at a point where I feel like the market is a little more stable, and that's always the key. In 16, I feel like the market stabilized a little bit earlier than it has this year. I feel like last year the market was kind of stabilized, you know, the third week of April, kind of end of April, prices had come down and kind of stuck at where they were going to stay for the majority of the playing season, which, you know, is still September, October. When some people kind of fall off. I feel like this year it took a little bit later. I feel like in the last 10 days you've seen a bit of a price drop to a more regular level, especially for gold, silver, bronze cards. And yeah, definitely I think you can go on the market and the name of the game is make stubs. You can go on the market and you can buy a guy cheap and maybe flip him on the weekend when his price bumps up a little bit, or you can keep him on your team and build stubs so that you can eventually turn those golds into diamond players. 99.9% of people are not going to turn their golds into diamonds by buying packs. It's just not going to happen. For every person that tweets out a Mike Trout, there's someone who's not tweeting out that they opened four packs.
Oh, no, I'm vocally tweeting out that I've opened 400 packs and not pulled a diamond.
You know, I was I was the first person to mention last week when they had the special pack that had the four players in it that I opened four of the packs and I literally did not get anything higher than a common for the players. I got 12 commons and four pieces of Griffey equipment. And I'm like, okay, like, you know, again, research and do with it what you will, universe. But yeah, there is a clear and concise strategy that you can use to make money on the market. And as Paul mentioned, it's being able to identify players who are going to jump levels. That is where the big money can be made. If you're able to identify someone who's going to go to the next level and be able to stockpile that person. And sometimes that means selling them beforehand because
yes,
a lot of times people's prices will spike on Thursday in the evening. Mm. And we've seen that in the past where the hype will be real on somebody and, you know, they're about to get that jump and everybody thinks and everyone's out there buying Thursday night and trying to get it. And then Friday comes and it's like, nope, sorry.
And then his price tanks.
Not going to happen. And then his price is in the bottom and you're either left holding 35 of the same guy or, you know, you were paying attention to the market on Thursdays. The problem with these strategies is from our perspective is, you know, I have the time to dedicate to that. If you're a more casual Diamond Dynasty person, it may be a little harder for you to, you know, pick the certain spots where you'll be able to do this. But if you are able to recognize the time patterns and the trends, it will greatly help you turn the market into a profitable experience for you.
I think you make a great point about selling on Thursday, and that really is the best way to guarantee yourself making stubs because your guy doesn't even have to get upgraded. If the market agrees with you that this guy might get upgraded, yeah, you might pass up a bigger payday, but you're mitigating risk. If you can guarantee yourself, if you bought this bronze, a bunch of them at 30 to 50 stubs, and he's up at 200 on the hype, take your profit and go. Like it a lot of times it doesn't make sense to just hold on unless you're not trying to, you know, just make every stub that you can. But if you are really just investing and trying to fatten that bankroll, selling on Thursday is actually the way to go. Great point.
Yeah, and if you can't watch every single baseball game and play Diamond Dynasty for 27 hours a day,
you can't do that, TJ.
Let me highly recommend. There's this podcast called The Sleeper and the Bust. If you just listen, and throughout a week, you hear them mentioning the same player over and over again, being someone that you should have on like your fantasy baseball team or your daily fantasy baseball team, maybe that's a guy that you should be investing in Diamond Dynasty.
Could be. We talk a lot about you know the trending players, that the uptrending players for sure. And obviously, given that for those that don't know, that's actually my podcast. And given that I am a avid Diamond Dynasty player, I am kind of focusing on. They kind of works both ways. All my Diamond Dynasty stuff I can kind of take onto the podcast and into my fantasy leagues and be like, oh man, I've been watching this guy in the market and wow, he is hitting really well. Maybe I'll get him on my fantasy team as well.
Yeah. And I think you want to be cognizant of what the tiers are in Diamond Dynasty, right? Diamonds 90 plus rated, golds 85 to 89, silvers, what is it up to 84? I don't know, 79?
80 to 84.
Okay, so yeah, you want to be cognizant of where those edges are because if you are looking for somebody to move up, you know, it's not very often. We've had it here the first 2 weeks because we're getting a lot of data on new players, but it's not very often that you see somebody jumping 5, 6, 7 points from and moving from, you know, a silver to a diamond, right?
Especially now because that first one, like you said, was a 3 week thing. Like we just had the first update. Mm-hmm. A couple weeks ago, that was a big chunk. I will say, though, they are being aggressive this year. And mm-hmm. so we are going to see jumps, but I agree with you. You're not going to see silver to diamond really at all. Like they're going to parse that out a bit and make them make the two jumps.
So right. So what you want to do is you look at who's sitting at 83 or 84 that's been playing well, who's sitting at 86 that's been in a slump, or somebody up at 89 that you're anticipating moving up a point or two, where that would be moving up from 89 to 90, or in the case of like Daniel Murphy, moving up 88 to 90 today. Mm-hmm. That's huge, because that does take him to diamond, and he doesn't have to be any higher than the 90 to have that diamond status. And then there's going to be players who are on the edge of falling down that you want to be careful about.
Yeah,
so I think you just want to have that understanding of the movement and where the significant benchmarks are for each player.
Yeah, and the big thing with that is as they go up a level, they're automatically more valuable because the quick sell price of the card will jump. So exactly. Like if you're an 84 silver selling for 115 stubs, if he gets boosted to gold and you don't even sell them on the market, you just quick sell them, you've made 880 stubs.
So, TJ, explain why you would want to quick sell.
I don't.
Because is there a reason you'd want to as opposed to listing it?
I don't think so, because they would probably be going for a little bit more than that anyway.
But sometimes.
If you don't want to waste your time, you could just blow it out.
So when there's somebody that's like really hyped up, that Jose Ramirez this week, people had massive numbers. You think TJ with 15 is a big investment? There are people that had hundreds. I got 200 Jose Ramirez as I'm sitting on. I got 80 Jose Ramirez as I'm sitting on. So he was unloaded. And so his actual price is kind of like, I think it's like, or it was earlier, like $1,250 buy now. And then, like 1,080 sell now. Well, with the tax on the sell now, you're actually going to make less than 1,000. So you might be better off just selling in that instance. So it's usually if you're going to sell right away and on somebody that was very cheap and widely known to be going up. Like I think Charlie Blackman will be like that when he finally gets his upgrade into gold. Bunch of people are sitting on a hell of a lot of Charlie Blackman's, so his price is not going to really skyrocket when he first gets gold. But that could be an incentive to waiting too. If you don't sell on Thursday's hype, then you're probably better off than waiting till next Tuesday. It's kind of interesting how the market works. You could still make guaranteed stubs, but like Jose Ramirez will probably level off around, I don't know, 1,500 to 1,700, but it probably won't happen till Tuesday or Wednesday of next week.
So I just wanted one thing with Paul mentioning how they kind of split up the upgrades. One thing that I learned from 16 is SDS will err on the side of caution when upgrading players if they think it's going to throw the market into extreme flux. They will hold off on upgrading a player in to help save the craziness that's going to be on the market. We saw that last year where you thought people were going to get upgraded and they deserved to get upgraded and people were stockpiling them and their price was climbing and climbing, and then no upgrade. And the only real way to explain that is they're trying to protect the integrity of the market and hope that, you know, they don't want to upgrade too many players all at once and then the market just goes wild. There's stubs flying all over. Like, they have shown that they will be patient with attribute upgrades to help save the integrity of their market.
Well, plus things are based off of 3 years, right? And so you have to be pretty exemplary to get an upgrade. The reason like somebody like an Aaron Judge can move fast is because he doesn't have a big major league track record.
Size, yeah.
So he's kind of over, you know, he's over indexed on the crappiness of last year. So those 95 plate appearances, they still matter, but we're seeing a changed player. We're seeing a better player. Conversely, there are instances where like a Ryan Zimmerman. Ryan Zimmerman is a known commodity as a star level player, but he's a few years removed from it. Well, now he looks healthy again, and so they can be a little bit more aggressive with him. Somebody who's kind of like in between is probably Jose Ramirez, and that's why it took a little while, because they're like, well, you know, he was great last year, but he had some crummy years before. So keep in mind that it's still based on 3 year ratings. Yeah. As we get further in to the season here, obviously that 2014 is going to mean less and less, and it's really going to be a 15, 16, 17 3 year rating that we're looking at.
All right. You know, one of my favorite features last year with Diamond Dynasty was Inside Edge, and it's been mentioned a couple times. But to summarize what it does is it gives you, it gives players boosts or downgrades for one specific day, for whatever scenario they're facing in real life. If they're, if they have a favorable matchup, they're going to get boosted. If they, if they're facing a tough situation, they're going to be downgraded. And what I liked about it was that it gave incentive to use players that weren't necessarily the most expensive. They weren't the highest rated standardized card available. But that, that welcomed in a bunch, the ability to play the mode without spending a lot of money by using a strategy of taking advantage of Inside Edge on a daily basis. Do you feel like Inside Edge is playing as much of a role now with more types of cards, different factors that are going into why you're choosing certain players? Is Inside Edge playing that role that it did last year, or is it kind of taking a back seat? Paul, do you pay a lot of attention to Inside Edge?
No, I still pay a lot of attention to it. And mm-hmm. and as you build your collection, and if you're somebody who's open to making changes, I am. I often rotate different guys. There's a few staples in the lineup in rotation, but for the most part, I will shift guys in and out based on Inside Edge. So I think it still matters a lot. There is, you know, with the abundance of content, some of it's getting pushed to the side, but, you know, maybe you have some bronze or silver flashback that you really like using, but on a given day, the Inside Edge version of maybe that same guy might be better. I'm thinking specifically of like Corey Dickerson right now. He's got that really cool flashback breakout card that's really nice, kills righties, but on the right Inside Edge five-star day, his live series card's probably better. So you're still using that. So I'm still keeping a very close eye on Inside Edge, as I think many people are, even if it's at the high end with their golds, diamonds, golds, and their best silvers. But of course, even in Battle Royale, excuse me, it's a huge deal because people are still looking to build their best team for the evening or the next day or two to try to go 12-0. So it's still a very important factor, and I still think it's one of the best things that the game has. And I love it this year that, you know, last year if you were great versus righties and you were getting Inside Edge, you got versus righty and versus lefty. That didn't really make sense. That you would get boosted against everybody, and this mm-hmm. year it is arm specific, which is really good.
Yeah. Chris, Inside Edge, what's it mean to you?
So from a position player standpoint, I actually don't look at Inside Edge at all. Mm-hmm. I set my lineup and I go with guys that I'm hitting well with. I mean, if I notice somebody who, you know, has like a double digit bump or a double digit decrease, I may consider making a change. But for the most part, I build my hitting lineup just based on guys I'm doing well with and from a comfort factor. Where I really only use Inside Edges for the bullpen. And that's mostly because of the fact that my bullpen is the area of the team where I have the most live series players and where it can be the most effective. There seems to be an issue with left-handed relievers. I don't know if they intend to have 99% of their left-handed relievers be on a negative IE boost every day, which is something that TJ and I have talked about and have seen a lot. A lot of left-handed relievers seem to be on negative quite frequently. I think it was Paul that mentioned Brett Cecil earlier. Mm-hmm. Brett Cecil has been one of those guys that has benefited from IE boost, and he's one of the very few lefties that has benefited from IE boost every day. But yeah, I really only look at Inside Edge for my bullpen. Other than that, I just kind of go with guys I'm comfortable with and guys that I'm doing well with at the time.
TJ, what do you think of Inside Edge this year so far?
Yeah, I still use it pretty much every day when I go to start doing whatever I'm going to do that day, specifically with my main team. I'll still go into the lineup management thing and do the auto-generate rosters, because maybe there is someone with Inside Edge that I wouldn't normally look at, that just because today he's got this extra stuff, maybe I'll give him a chance and put him out there. I've actually seen Inside Edge actually work in interesting ways. So for like a guy like Freddie Freeman, where he's really good against righties, but not so great against lefties. Some days he'll have boosts against lefties, which will kind of even him out. And then he's questionably even more valuable because now you're good against no matter what they're throwing at you. And also, the only real problem with it right now is left-handed relievers all seem to be down. Like we said, Brett Cecil is a good option. Guys that are hurt are good options. So Glenn Perkins right now is okay. But one guy that's actually kind of immune to it is Ryan Buchter of the Padres.
Yeah.
Because
I had to get rid of him. I couldn't pitch well with him for some reason. Well, I got killed every time.
He was actually, wind up is pretty bad.
Yeah, his wind up, you can pretty much steal on it all the time. It was real bad earlier in the year. But yeah, I mean, now we're just merging lots of stuff that we've already talked about. But
yeah,
as Paul said, guys with small sample sizes in their history, like Buchter only really pitched last year. I think he pitched in 2014 a little bit. But last year he pitched so good that his hits per nines and K per nines are 99.98.
Isn't that insane?
So even taking a negative six hit on both of those, he's still one of the best left-handed relievers that you can have in the game. So,
and then also to keep in mind as we talk about live series players here, this does Inside Edge doesn't affect legends or anything like that. It also doesn't affect players who are injured or suspended, right? So you have stability with those players. So Inside Edge can benefit you greatly, or in some cases you may prefer your players not to be messed with. But
yeah, last year one of the people everybody was using was the
Caps.
The Caps and the Kyle Schwarber. Remember,
that's right.
Remember, he got hurt, but he was still getting the boosts for a while. So people were still playing with him, and then they ended up finally taking it away. And so that card became like non-existent in games after that.
I want to go back to one thing that we briefly, or at least briefly, came up, and that's the ticket counter, right? This is something that I started playing Diamond Dynasty this year. Now, I understood how tickets worked last year. It was probably a week or so before I even realized that section was actually there for tickets. So I haven't actually spent any of my tickets, but I'm curious what your strategies are with collecting tickets and whether you're spending them or saving them up. Chris?
So I have spent tickets on two separate occasions. I picked up the Flashback Salty because, like TJ, I know how big of a monster he can be against righties. And I used it to pick up the Juan Marichal that was introduced a few weeks ago for the level 50, I think it was. The thing is that I've had people ask me what the strategy can be with tickets, and I've kind of like half answered it because you really don't know. One thing that's going to be obvious is last year the top prizes on the ticket store were 5,500 tickets. There is no way that the top prizes on the store this year are going to be 5,500 tickets I feel like everyone's going to be able to afford them because having bought two items on the ticket store already, I still have 3,600 tickets because they're more plentiful. Like they're easier to come by. Every time you complete any kind of mission, there's some sort of ticket based reward there. In terms of whether I'm making good decisions or bad decisions with spending the tickets it's way too early to tell because we really don't know what the top end of that ticket store is going to look like.
TJ, you've been spending any tickets yet, or are you holding off until some kind of grand card comes into play?
Just kind of slow rolling it right now. Like I said, bought the Salty. I bought the Freddie Freeman just because I'm a Braves fan. Literally just got the Dale Murphy just because I'm a Braves fan. Actually, that Dale Murphy, I think he has like some crazy contact versus righties, versus lefties, I mean. So actually he's kind of a good combo to use with the Salty LaMacchia behind the
plate. Yeah, because he qualifies as a catcher.
Yeah. But yeah, I think some of the cards on the ticket counter have been kind of, I don't want to say like one tool players or like two tool players. Like that Blackman's really good against righties, but I don't think he was that great against lefties.
The Dickerson, yeah.
The Dickerson, yeah. So I feel like most of the cards that were out there, they could do like one thing good.
Sure.
And I'm kind of past that on my team where if you're actually going to be a card that's going to be used now, you need to do three things good. not.
The problem is, and this is something that we actually haven't touched on, but it has definitely been discussed on this show previously, is with the lineup thing now where you can't see the left-handedness or right-handedness of your opponent, it does curb a lot of the appeal of some of these pure platoon guys. I totally understand mm-hmm. that. And so that does make things a little bit more difficult. I think right now, since we are in kind of the beginning stages of the ticket counter, there's only been, first off, today was the first time that there was going to be a diamond on it. And there's an Oral Hershiser in there right now. If you got in there right away, you might have seen the Alex Gordon, and that's going to be cycled in. There's a handful of others, the Chris Medlin's coming. So they've got like five or six goals that they're going to start rotating there. Or diamonds, I mean, that are going to be for the gold tier. All you have to be is gold zero. You just got to be right into the gold level and you can get it. But the other cards that they've been mostly having have been silvers and bronzes and a couple golds here and there. I got the Marischal as well. But one of the things I think I like getting them for different missions, the breakout mission with Eddie Matthews, where you have to have 50 breakouts. That wasn't completable until I think today is the first day because of all the breakouts that they put out. Maybe a little bit sooner if you had some of the other breakouts, but with a rush of breakouts, you can now get the 50 that you need to continue that. By the way, that card is unbelievable. I don't know if you guys have seen the numbers on it. It is so filthy. Eddie Matthews for the Braves is a disgusting card. But I've been collecting them for missions and for events, whether ones that we kind of knew that were coming or ones that I'm just guessing might be coming, you know, like rookie ones. There could be impact veteran ones. I don't know. So if I see a good card and I like it, I'm just collecting it. Plus, I play tournaments with my friends. I run like little series with my friends, like, hey, let's do a bronze series. Let's do a silver only series. So I just like collecting cards that I like. I'm not afraid to, you know, spend my tickets in case something great comes out. When that happens, I'll be sure to be saving up. But if you play enough, if you're a big user, if you're a power user, I would say don't worry about your tickets. If you are more of a casual user who's not going to be playing all the time every day, save your tickets a little bit more. Maybe pick and choose here and there. Let your amount of play kind of dictate how much you want to spend.
Okay, so on Twitter, I asked for some questions or topic suggestions, and got a bunch back. Now we've covered a lot of what people were looking to hear about already, but I've got a few separated out here to address. So let's go with this one, which I know TJ and Paul, Chris, you may have also, don't remember, but. This came up on Twitter, and you guys debated a bit. Question over how about having a DH in Diamond Dynasty? Now, I know a lot of people don't like it because you end up having to hit with pitchers and all that, but it adds in, obviously, the strategy of having a pitcher spot and having people on the bench and double switching and things of that nature. But if not DH, is there a different way they can – or I'm sorry, let me put it this way. If they did add a DH, isn't there a way that they could keep that strategy involved by maybe bringing in a fatigue element here?
There is a fatigue element, though. So I prefer all DH in real life. Like I think the NL should adopt the DH because there's like a few good hitting pitchers and it's more trouble than it's worth usually. But that's not where we're at right now. So as long as there's a NL rules that exist in real life, Diamond Dynasty needs to keep it that way. Like having I just don't see a justification for it. I really think they need to keep it as is. There is already fatigue. I guess they'd have to amp it up, but then you're kind of getting into artificially doing it. And I kind of like now where if you're really dealing with somebody, you can go 7, 8, or 9, you know, kind of depending how it goes. But for the most part, you really should be looking to go between 5, 6, and 7, depending on where they're at and what situations you come up with. I like, even though it's a tough decision, I like when it comes up fifth inning, I have, you know, I'm down one or maybe tied or something. There's two on, one out, and the pitcher's up. That's a tough decision at this point. But it is kind of a playoff baseball thing. We're not playing 162 the way, the real life is. So I feel like in that situation, I take my pitcher out. A lot of folks keep him in, and that's fine. But I don't know. You can't put the DH in, and I don't think we're ever going to see the DH until there's a change in Major League Baseball. In fact, I think Ramon's actually said that. Of course, things can change. I don't want to ever say never, but I feel very strongly that we won't see a DH in Diamond Dynasty.
TJ, do you like the way the pitching rotation is handled as far as random selection? Of course, they say it's random. It never feels quite random because I have certain pitchers who I think I rarely ever see start games. But do you think there's a better way they might be able to do the pitcher selection?
I mean, I think that's just kind of the way you have to do it.
You don't want it. You don't like the idea of a straight kind of rotation locking you into five.
People would cheese their way through the fourth and fifth guys and play with friends, and so that they were always at 1, 2, and 3 with seasons. Mm. That was the response I got when I said that about having a rotation. And I'm like, yep, that's right. You guys are that's the answer. So yeah. I don't think you can do it.
Yeah, unless they did something with the seasons, like how Madden does it, where you put your team in and they're locked for X amount of games. And you're guaranteed to go through that rotation twice only in that
sounds
mode.
That sounds like something they would put in as a separate mode or something, you know, the battle royale and events and stuff, where with events you are locking in, you're not locking in a rotation, but you're locking in a roster. So
it would be interesting if they put it in BR, because you can't change your team anyway. Well, and that way, would that give you more incentive if it just went 1 through 5? Would you have more incentive to maybe get a diamond or a gold? Maybe not a diamond, because you'd still only get them twice in a 12-0. But maybe a gold or even 3 or 4 silvers. You know, it could change the strategy there if you're just go. Obviously, your first game all the time, you would have your diamond or your number one, whoever it is. I could see it in BR. I think it would be cheesed around too much in seasons, unless they were able to code it to where your rotation doesn't change. Except in seasons.
What one suggestion, and I don't really have an opinion either way on it, but one suggestion that I read on Reddit was when you go into an online game, your opponent is actually able to pick 3 of your starters, and then your starter is chosen at random from those 3. It's something that would never happen, but it was kind of it kind of got me thinking, like, you know, outside of what they do now, is there any other way they could really handle it? And to be honest, I personally feel like the way starting pitcher choice is handled right now is probably the best way it could be.
Yeah. And because the way the fatigue works is through all the different parts of Diamond Dynasty, I don't know if there's going to be anything better than what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's, you know, it's like, it's not random. You feel like sometimes it's not random. Obviously it is random, but so I've had, you know, the same guy 4 or 5 games straight, but it really does make you, like, if you're going to go into seasons or, you know, any of the other modes, you have to consider all of your rotation spots. You know, you have to make sure that you don't have any weak spots, because, you know, if you do, there's a 1 in 5 or whatever the RNG actually is chance that guy's coming up. I like it the way it is. I really don't know of a way that they could do it better and it still have that random anti-cheese element to it.
I think I'd also like to see games that weren't always your number one against the opponent's number one. You know, like, you end up with just super low scoring games, or you end up with both number five starters. You know, like, I'd like to see a little more variation in there.
Yeah. Too much crying. I always face number one with my number five. I can already picture the crybaby.
Of course,
I have never gotten my number one against their number five. Yeah, right. You go through their game log, they've gotten it like 10 times in their last 30 games, but they remember the 2 times that their number five had to face Syndergaard or something. So, yeah, I mean, people would cry, but I wouldn't mind if it was kind of random to that way too, where it wasn't always 1v1.
5v5. Yeah. Okay, we got another tweet here from Mitchell, who asks about the rewards for things like events and programs. Are they strong enough to pull you in to actually play those modes, to put your time there? Because a lot of them, like the recent events, were, I think, giving out silver cards. And he says that's kind of weak for the time investment making there.
What? I just don't agree with that, really, because, like, first off, the time wasn't that much. You can go 10-1. You don't have to go 10-0 to get the Jackie. 20 wins isn't that hard. Obviously, there's a little bit of factored in it with if you're getting really bad server issues or whatever.
Well, but I mean, no, it's only four or five days, right?
Yeah, and I understand that. Like, I don't know. I don't see it being a problem. First off, it doesn't always have to be some amazing gold or diamond. Secondly, the Jackie plays as a diamond at second base. You wouldn't put him at first anyway because of the power. If you put him at second base, if you put those exact ratings at second base, it's a 95. So I don't know, man. That just strikes me as griping a gripe. I just don't, because it's not going to be amazing every time, but it's doing what we wanted, which was giving us reasons to use different cards, do different things. I quite like it, and getting the 10-1, I don't think is overly difficult for a 95 second baseman.
Well, okay, so sorry, I was just gonna say, you know, when the last event kicked off, I right after that I DM'd TJ and I said, is there something about these cards that I don't know, or why would I play, you know, 20 plus hours to try and get these when I could put 20 plus hours, or maybe it's not 20 hours, you know what I'm talking about though. Significant hours into this when I could put those hours instead into some other mission that's going to reap a reward that's a little better.
Yeah, sure. That was my exact thing is, again, this is strictly on a personal level. I didn't feel like any of the rewards in the most recent event were anything that I had any interest in whatsoever, given the state of my particular. Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Like, again, I'm the
not everything
person.
Has to appeal to every person. I think that's the entitlement problem. That yeah. Not with you, Snaggle. I'm saying people in general. Like,
and that's why I've been all along for, you know, since, you know, TJ and I were reviewing all the information they were putting out on streams. I've maintained all along that having more ways to play Diamond Dynasty is essential, because if I don't want to play events, I can play something else. Mm-hmm. I can play Seasons. I can play BR. I can do Conquest. I can grind, you know, whatever. Again, for me personally, I wasn't going to put the time in to get the Jackie. I had no interest in the Verlander. I had better options on the table that I worked towards. You know, I absolutely love the fact that they can put out a special weekend event and it's not for everybody. And I know that burns people. And again, it's not just Mitchell on Twitter. It's a lot of people on Twitter. It's people in our Discord. It's people in my Twitch chat who are like, why are they putting out these trash events? It's like, hey, you know what? This is the individuality that you can have in this mode. You don't like the event? Great. There's 15 other things you can do. But you know what? Paul, you know, I'm assuming you spent time in the event. You seem to have a favorable opinion of it.
I played it. I mean, yeah. I got the Jackie.
And that's great. I didn't play. I played one game just because, you know, I wanted to put a lineup in and, you know, whatever. But I really had no dedication to it. I know, I think, TJ, you got halfway through it and then had some server issues. And again, it's, you know, you have just the few of us here all at different segments and different opinions towards it. And that's great. That's a good thing. People need to stop being so negative because one little thing did not appeal to their personal senses.
Exactly. That's what I get. And like, it's fine if you don't want to play, but the caustic negativity about it, like, shut up. I don't need to hear it. Like, it's easy to skip over. Now, if we only had, if we didn't have the options, as you point out, Snaggle, then it would be an issue, right? Because then you're like, well, I'm kind of forced to play this thing. I don't want to, you know, I don't even know if it would necessarily be an issue, but I'd hear more, I could understand the griping a little bit more. But instead, it's like, just pass. If you're locked up at second base, because again, I view that Jackie as a second baseman, not a first baseman. If you're locked up at second base, you don't want to play with a bunch of rookie cards, or young cards, it was 25 and under, then don't do it. I am obsessed with building lineups and trying to build the best lineups that I can. I'm going to play every single event. I'm at least going to put a lineup together and see how it goes. You know, I tell you what, too, it's a better time investment than BR. BR is much harder. You know, they're more, it's more difficult to get through a 12-0 BR than it is to do a 10-1 events, and I'll take a 95. Now, I didn't go all the way with it. I didn't get the Verlander because I was looking at the prices of the Verlander, and I was seeing that they were going to even out. I thought it was going to end up being 4,000 or less. Right now, it's at 3,500 for buy now, 2,950 for sell now. I'll just buy it. I'm a Tigers fan. I'll get the Verlander. It might be good for a mission down the line for like a big Verlander, and it might not. It might not. But again, if you don't like it, you don't have to play that mode. That's the best part about this game. Lots of ways to play.
All right, let's take one more. This one comes from CWA. He wants to know really about the transparency on pack odds. And I think this is interesting because we all agree you shouldn't buy packs necessarily. Mm-hmm. Now, this mode and these Ultimate Team modes in general make not just millions. For EA, it's hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And as we saw with daily fantasy sports, when you start making a lot of money, the government starts looking into it. And I wonder, as far as legalities go, whether it starts to be looked at as gambling when you don't even know the odds. In normal gambling, you know your odds. Here, they are disguised or hidden completely. And so CWA's question relates to, you know, the bases loaded pack says you get three times the odds of getting a diamond, but you don't know what those odds are. You don't know what the original odds are. So you just have to kind of take their word for it. So I'm curious what you guys think about how they handle packs and odds and communicating what you're actually buying.
I mean, it could be better, right, to list the odds. That's fine. I don't know if they're concerned that then people wouldn't play, then I think that would be the more – or buy them, then that would be more reason to do it, because if that's what you're afraid of, then okay. Then you definitely need to get it out. But I do think it's kind of understood that they're bad. The odds are low. But, yeah, I think they could put percentages out there and just say, hey, this is what it is. It is a gamble. It is a scratch-off ticket sort of deal as far as I'm concerned. But, you know I agree that they could have some transparency there. People would still buy packs. People aren't going to stop buying them. Most people know the deal here that you're getting bad odds, but you're trying to spike something good. It's fun. It's a rush. But, yeah, putting the odds on the packs and then saying, okay, this 3X to get a diamond means you have a, 3% chance because all you had was a 1% before that. Right. That'd be fine by me. I would like to see that.
Yeah, because you see these packs come out and you've got this much higher percentage chance of getting it, and then you see people who reply back, I didn't get jack in the 20 packs I just opened or whatever. And so there's an expectation that you're going to get something, and really it's still very low chance of getting anything. But there's this expectation where, all right, this is where I'm going to, because the packs cost more. And, so you're going into it with higher expectations of what's going to come out of it. And then you end up with a lot of disappointed people. Yeah. That's why I'm surprised the popularity of these modes and the number of packs being open haven't kind of peaked already, because almost always you see 99% negativity about, man, I just wasted so much money or so much currency on these packs. I'm never playing again or whatever, and then they're back, the next day. But
so, I am definitely not a lawyer, but from a somewhat legal standpoint, no one actually spends money on packs. You spend money through PSN for MLB The Show to get in-game currency, which you then spend on packs. There definitely is. Like, again, you use the daily fantasy sports comparison where you literally could, I don't know, I know some states banned now, but you literally could, open your credit card, open your PayPal, and literally spend money directly on a daily fantasy sports lineup, which I have done in the past. But there, for a company like Sony San Diego, there definitely is some sort of cover for gambling allegations here with the fact that you're buying a currency from Sony. Again, not a lawyer. Don't know how that would all work out. Like, but yeah. But I feel like what that ultimately means is we will never, ever, ever have published pack odds. It's never going to happen.
I feel like we used to, though. I feel like a couple of years ago they had him, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
I see, we've seen news reports about my child took my credit card and spent $300 in FIFA Ultimate Team.
Be a better parent. Whatever.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's great.
I'm serious. Right? But, be a better parent. Like, you can't blame that. You can't blame games for that.
Okay, so, but you also have situations like the CSGO gambling.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Fiasco where a lot of children were gambling with money, and we're right on the edge of it. You're right, Chris. They have some cover there. I agree, but. As when the government starts to get involved, I mean, maybe it doesn't change completely, but I wouldn't be surprised if the procedures that go into it have to be altered in some manner. Because I think there's
going to be... That was also third party, though, too.
Right, but yeah, but first party allowed it to happen. So
sure.
It's just this thing about when you're talking about hundreds of million dollars, the government's probably going to get in there eventually and try and regulate it in some form or fashion. So you know what that means long term, I don't know, but I just suspect that day is coming sometime.
Yeah, in the future. And we're talking about something bigger than again the whole, you know, the CS:GO thing compared to card collecting modes, minor. People will do what they can. You know, people will fabricate things on social media. To try and make, you know, some money here and there. That's going to happen. But you're right. I mean, we're talking, you know, upwards of billions of dollars in the sports gaming industry that is going from consumers to companies to rip virtual packs. It is going to come to a point where the government is going to say, hey, you know, we got to take a look at this and make sure that it's on the up and up, whether that's in 12 months, 36 months, or, you know, but I think you're right. I think it's inevitable that it's going to happen. But honestly, I don't know if it's going to change much from a consumer's perspective.
Yep. All right. So I think that's going to do it for this episode, but let's get in some plugs. I want you guys to let everyone know where you can be found, what you're working on, you know, where can we find the content that you're producing? Chris, why don't you go ahead and start?
So I can be found on YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch at SnaggleJ on all of them. I've actually been doing some stuff for Hit the Pass in the last few weeks, doing some Diamond Dynasty theme stuff there that you, Brian, and Rich have been so nice to post for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I appreciate that. But yeah, I stream probably 3 to 4 days a week over on Twitch, and my Twitter is always guaranteed to be somewhat of a good time. So yeah, guaranteed to be somewhat of a good time.
Somewhat guaranteed
or you're somewhat back.
Again, I got that legality in there, right?
Paul, I know you got a lot going on. Let us know where you can find everything.
You can find me on Twitter at Spore. I kind of keep everybody abreast of the situation over there. I'm on Twitch, pspore24. That's SPORER for the last name. I haven't gotten my YouTube stuff really cooking just yet, but I like to do picture reviews. Snag was mentioned that he did a Juan Marichal one. I did a lot of that last year. It's a lot of fun to kind of just review guys, put the videos up on YouTube. I write for Fangraphs and do podcasting. I'm the editor of the fantasy blog over there, which is called Rotographs, but it's fangraphs.com/fantasy. And so, again, Twitter's the best way to keep up because I tweet out links to everything, but those are the individual paths as well.
Awesome. TJ.
Hey.
All the usual? What you got going on?
Yeah, all the Vat Sports Gamers that you can find, those are all me. Also playing a lot of Out of the Park Baseball, as I am the community manager for those guys over there.
Such a good game.
If you like talking Diamond Dynasty or MLB The Show just in general, we do Bullpen Banter Monday nights on youtube.com/thatsportsgamer. And if you like talking about it in more than 140 characters at a time, you can go to thatsportsgamer.com/BBDiscord. We have a Discord channel. I think we got, what do we have, like 80, 90, almost 100 people in there now?
We currently have 81.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're in there talking about this stuff all day, what they're pulling in packs, talking about, you know, who's the next move to pick up, all that kind of stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well, this was a lot of fun, you know, getting to talk extensively about Diamond Dynasty with you guys. We'll probably revisit this topic again in a couple months and see how things have evolved when we have an even better picture of what ended up working well and maybe what didn't and where it goes from there. So for Brian Wiedeye, Pasta Padre, thanks again to all the listeners out there. We'll be back with another episode of the Press Row Podcast next week. Take care till then.